You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. Today's show is brought to you by Ducks Unlimited. The biggest online auction is coming soon. Stay tuned for the Into the Vault online auction, where you can find anything, everything, DU. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreeslein, happy to be with you for the next hour. A couple fun guests we'll be chatting with. Tony Peterson will join us. We'll talk deer with him and what keeps him busy when it comes to whitetail deer hunting during the month of December. There's still some muzzleloader hunting going on, of course, as well as the late archery season goes to the end of the year. So we'll chat with him about that. Brad Parsons will join us, DNR Fisheries Chief. Been meaning to get him on to talk about the potential 4 walleye bag limits statewide. So we will have a lengthy conversation with Mr. Parsons about that. Les Meister and I will close it out, but let's kick it off with Tim Spielman, editor at Outdoor News. Tim, good to see you. St. Paul Ice Fishing Show this weekend. We alluded to that last week, and there's some ice out there, isn't there?
Yeah, it looks real good. As we reported in this week's paper, almost every report that I read in the fishing report, we covered it in a story on the front page, as well as across the state coverage in the fishing report.
A great picture, by the way, of Red Lake from last week, already showing, you know, it getting pretty much iced up. I think people could see cracks, could see it wasn't walkable, it wasn't fishable yet. Mm-hmm. But a good caption there explaining that things had frozen up even more since that image had been snapped. You know, some warmer temperatures this weekend I'm seeing, Tim. 44, I think, in the Twin Cities. We're probably not going to be making ice this weekend, but maybe we won't be losing it either.
Well, the daylight's so short now. You reach that high temperature for all of, what, a couple, 3 hours maybe? Mm-hmm. And then it dives again. So as long as it gets cold overnight, below freezing, I think we'll keep making some to some extent. I mean, it's not like we're going to hit some 50-degree mark or something like that. I think the bigger threat, from what I could tell earlier in the week, was on the larger lakes and the fact that there was some pretty big wind in the forecast. And once you get a nice cap on a lake with a little bit of ice thickness, wind's not going to hurt. But if you have any bit of open water, that wind whips up and all of a sudden starts deteriorating your ice and you're back to where you were several days ago. So I think that was a few days ago anyway, that was probably the bigger concern.
Right, yeah, and we're talking 50-mile-an-hour winds in parts of the state late this past week, so that probably didn't aid ice making, but plenty cold out there. I was driving home last weekend, Tim, from Thanksgiving. I was amazed at how many like creeks and even rivers I saw that were iced over. Now, I don't want people walking on creeks and rivers. That's moving water underneath, but nonetheless, it surprised me to see moving water like that iced over before December 1st.
I didn't see any water. I was freezing my butt off in a deer stand. Let me tell you, ladder stands have been kind of cold this past week for all those muzzleloader and archery hunters out there, who I've been hearing a little bit from.
Hey, you were hunting Wisconsin, correct? Tim, any luck? I haven't asked you off air yet.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Long story. I had we'll probably talk deer in a minute. I had a really long conversation with Todd Froberg from the Minnesota DNR, and I brought up some points from my woods experience. And I said, should this worry me or what about this? And mostly it was about turkeys. I saw so many turkeys, huh, and I never realized how incredibly loud they are at fly up when there's about 15 to 20 of them, and how noisy and talkative they are when they come down in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I was asking Todd, I said, do you think that bothers deer? Because, man, when the turkeys were around, I didn't see any deer. And so we kind of discussed that a little bit. But That was my deer hunting. I saw way more turkeys than I did deer.
You know, Tim, when I was a kid, we had a chicken coop, and it was kind of that way at night when the chickens would go into the roost, and they were settling into their positions and jockeying for the right spot. They were really loud, and then they settled in, and then the same thing in the morning. I guess that's just how poultry, wild or domestic, operate.
I was just surprised. I'm like, man, what is that commotion? It was kind of cool turkey watching.
Yeah,
well, deer hunting.
Turkeys are amazing creatures, and I know there's been times when I've heard them gobble that I just laugh aloud. It's such an amazing sound that it almost seems out of place, and it seems tropical or something to me. It's like they're a unique species. We're lucky to have turkeys rebound. Well, okay, we got off on a little turkey jag there, and that's okay. Let's talk deer a little bit. I would dare say some good news on the white-tailed deer front, huh, Tim? Looks like both Minnesota and Wisconsin harvest is going to be up several percent from last year.
Yeah, I don't remember what I saw in Wisconsin. It was under 10%.
I've got that right here. Yeah, Wisconsin looks like going into this weekend, they were up 5.2% firearms kill from a year ago and 8.7% total, including the bow hunting and the crossbow seasons over there. So those are some solid increases in a badger state.
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, with the story I wrote this week for Minnesota regarding deer harvest, Todd Froberg said, do you want to go with firearms or cumulative? And I thought, well, most of the firearm seasons have been over for a while. So what I reported on was the cumulative total deer harvest for all seasons. And we were up about, they were having some issues with reporting. So I didn't have real up-to-date information, but pretty darn close. So it was up about 5%, or 4%, excuse me, total all seasons. And there's still seasons to go. That was compared with last year at the same date. So Todd's expectation was that we'll probably finish it out 4 or 5% above where we were last year. So that's the good news. I guess if you compare it to the five-year mean, we're still 5% down and 7% from the 10-year mean, but going in the right direction anyway. And I don't think anybody found that surprising just due to the fact that there were more deer on the landscape. Mm-hmm. There were a lot that did not die with last year's non-winter.
We finished last year a little less than 160,000. That would seem to suggest we're probably going to be a little less than maybe 170,000 this year. I guess we'll see what the total is.
Yeah, just based on some really accurate past, in terms of muzzleloader hunt, late archery, December archery kill, and then there's a CWD hunt, which doesn't account for a whole lot of deer. You add them all together and, throw another 10,000 or so onto what we have now, and we will be about 4 or 5% above last year.
I believe Wisconsin, as we speak, is at like 289, so they're probably looking at close to a 300,000 deer kill for the year, which that's a lot of deer. I mean, for the whining and crying we hear about there being no deer in Wisconsin, year after year, they sure kill a lot off the landscape. Tim, some not-so-good news. You had some updated CWD numbers, which are changing too rapidly for my taste.
Yeah. I think last week maybe you and I talked about the number of CWD positive cases, and there were a lot of suspected deer out there that just needed verification, I guess. So a lot of those did turn into positive. So we're up to 66 with a lot of time. Well, I shouldn't say a lot of time, but there's some deer that will be tested yet. When you combine that late CWD hunt, probably a few archery deer here and there. I don't know how many more we'll get for testing. Couple thousand, I suppose.
Yeah.
But still, when you're at 66, so we were at 66 at latest count, but there were still more than a dozen, 14, I guess, suspect deer out there. And like we mentioned last week, more often than not, those suspects turn into positives. So you add another dozen to that 66 and you're at about 80 deer or so. Todd Froberg said it's statistically significant increase over last year's 48 positives.
Yeah, and they're not spread across the whole state. The increase is in that CWD hot zone where it definitely seems to be becoming more and more dense with infections. I believe are we up to 26 now in permit area 646, which is where my dad's property is, right where we hunt, Tim. That is apparently the most infected deer permit area in Minnesota, unfortunately, at least for me. I think last week, it was like 42, 43, and I kind of threw out some numbers. Well, maybe we'll finish in that 60 range. Well, we blew past that, I don't know how many we're going to get. We're probably going to be up to 80 or so, and I think last year we had was it 40 some?
48 total.
48. So, I mean, yeah, like Froberg said, that is statistically significant. That's a lot of infected deer in an area where we're trying to suppress the deer population, right? Keep the deer population lower. We got special CWD hunts, and yet the percentage is still, or the number of infected deer continues to climb. This is a big jump this year.
It really is. You know, I guess the silver lining is that it was confined to this zone. You know, you don't ever want to open the new frontier, so to speak.
All right. Well, sorry to end the segment on kind of a dour note, but we got to be honest and realistic here about the status of CWD. It's definitely staked its claim in southeast Minnesota.
Yeah, it certainly appears so.
Yeah. All right, Tim. Well, good luck ahead. We'll talk to you next week when I think ice fishing is probably going to be running full bore.
I'm sure it will be.
Thanks, Tim.
Yep, thank you.
Tim Spielman, editor at Outdoor News. Let's break. We will check in, I think, with Brad Parsons when we come back. We'll talk fishing with him. He's the DNR Fisheries Chief. Don't go away. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Your land is your legacy, but keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land in Michigan, Wisconsin, or Minnesota, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit familyforestcarbon.org and enroll today.
Sick of eating tag soup? It's time to own your odds this fall with OnX Hunt, the GPS hunting app trusted by millions of hunters. Now you'll have access to nationwide public and private land ownership information, waypoints, optimal wind for each stand, tracks, and much more, all at your fingertips. Go to onxmaps.com/hunt and use code ODN20 at checkout to receive 20% off your membership. That's code ODN20.
Our outdoor heritage is at a crossroads. Fewer hunters and anglers mean less support for the wild places we love. The Outdoor News Foundation is changing that story, one young person at a time. For just $25, you can give a child a year of outdoor knowledge via scholarships, camps, and access to OutdoorNews.com. This Give to the Max Day help us cast a legacy for tomorrow's hunters and anglers. Visit OutdoorNews.com/foundation to get involved and donate today.
Did you know 22 Americans die each day waiting for organ transplants, most of them for kidneys? The good news is that MatchingDonors.com is helping to change that. MatchingDonors.com is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that links organ donors with people in desperate need of kidneys and other transplants. And now you don't need to donate a kidney to save a life. You can donate your boat, car, or real estate, with 100% of the proceeds going to help save the lives of people needing organ transplants. Visit MatchingDonors.com or call 800-385-0422.
Every year, millions of waterfowl wing their way across the continent in a display unmatched anywhere else in nature. Along the way, wetlands provide the resting places and critical resources these waterfowl need to complete their journey. But these rest areas for America's waterfowl and other wildlife are being degraded and destroyed. This is why, since 1937, Ducks Unlimited has been a world leader in wetlands conservation, ensuring safe passage for nature's most beautiful creations, protection against flooding, and sanctuary for the human soul. If we don't want to grow old in a world without wild places, we must speak up. We must step up so that we may fill the skies for generations to come. A public service from Ducks Unlimited.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreisline, thrilled to be with you for another segment. I hope you like the broadcast. If you do, check us out online at OutdoorNews.com, or you can give us a call at 800-535-5191 if you would like to subscribe. I want to chat now with our friend Brad Parsons. He's the DNR Fisheries Section Manager. He was in a lot of headlines here a few weeks ago, and we finally carved out some time for him to join us now to talk about some policy issues cooking here this winter and looking forward. Brad, good to see you. Thanks for joining me.
Well, it's great, Rob. Happy to talk whenever we can.
Brad, we were talking off air. You've been in the role for 6 years now. Not a bad run for a DNR's fisheries chief.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I think a couple of my predecessors, I think I've passed them. So, but I'm still enjoying the work. There's a lot of interesting things happening, including what we're talking about today.
Yeah, there's some positive things going on. Real quick, we should talk. There will be a two fish walleye limit on Mille Lacs. You got to be happy about that this winter. And then four fish up on Red Lake.
Yeah, both those fall assessments went where we expected them to be. And particularly with Mille Lacs, we had a really good year of forage. And that, you know, tempered the bite back down to where it should normally be. And the fish are nice and healthy. And so we expect people to be able to get up there and fish. And yeah, two fish between 18 and 20, or you could have one of those be that that one over 28 trophy.
And by forage, we're talking, there's a lot of perch in the lake, correct? So, yeah. That's good. I mean, not only for the walleyes, but sometimes anglers can catch a jumbo or two to help fill out the fillets they bring home.
You know, and that is something that we've seen a resurgence the last few years in those large keeper-sized perch for people in Mille Lacs. And that's very positive. And not just perch, but we had what looks like the biggest year class of young in-year tulipy that we've had in as long as we've been doing our forage netting. And that's really exciting as well.
Yeah, because they're a cold water sensitive species, and with concerns about warming water temperatures out there, nice to see the tulipies still doing well in Mille Lacs. Real quick on Red Lake, sounds like you got a big old year class of what is it, 13 to 16 inch walleye, something like that. That man, they're going to be really big here in a couple of years, huh?
Well, and that's one of the reasons that that fisheries managed the way it is in terms of be it a 1 over 17 as it is this year, or 1 over 20. It all depends on what's coming up. And we want to focus the harvest on those fish under 17 this year.
Yeah, good. Well, that should make some great walleye fishing once we get some fishable ice. Yeah,
that's
exciting. I'd like to spend some time this segment talking to you about this story that broke several weeks ago. Now, we've been talking about the statewide walleye limit for years. You and I were talking off air. You said you made a presentation on this matter before you were even the fisheries chief, what, 7-8 years ago. I guess briefly, tell us about the history of the 6 walleye bag limit that we have statewide. I guess it goes back to 1956.
Right.
And, you know, some of the chatter that's that we've had about that limit over maybe the past 5 or 6 years.
Sure. You know, the idea of changing from a 6 statewide to a 4 fish bag has been around, you know, for at least a decade. And with 1956, I mean, that's close to 70 years ago, and fishing has changed a lot since then. We all know that in terms of even ice fishing lines, GPS, fish finding equipment. It's just a different thing. And ice fishing has really exploded in popularity. So it's a different world than it was back then. And in the meantime, we've also started managing the vast majority of our large lakes with a 4 fish bag, or in some cases lower in certain years, and for Red Mille Lacs in particular. So it's not a new concept by any stretch of the imagination.
What's changed here, Brad? I mean, the DNR was lukewarm to this idea, I think would be a good way to put it. It was in the legislature. Kerry Rood carried it for a number of years. I think the DNR was finally on board. There were a number of legislators who weren't. I didn't seem like something the DNR, you know, necessarily was going to, you know, go to the mat on. But now here in the past month, we're hearing that what the DNR intends to implement this, a 4 fish walleye limit in 2026, walleye opener 2026, whatever date that is, sometime in early May. Via rule, correct? This would not occur legislatively?
Correct. Yeah, this is something we have rulemaking authority to do. When it came up in the legislature a couple of years ago, that is another way of doing things, but not the only way. There were actually people who were greatly in support of a lower bag limit, but didn't like the idea of doing it legislatively. They thought that it should be more of our rulemaking process, that the legislature should be for broader things and not nuts and bolts of biology and fish limits, et cetera. So that was one thing. Rulemaking, you mentioned 2026. If this moves ahead after our public input process, that's the goal. But rulemaking takes time, and being able to hear everybody's voice is what takes time. And so while if it does pass, I would hope to see it in 2026. I honestly can't guarantee that.
You listen to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Gerisline. We are chatting with Brad Parsons, the Minnesota DNR's fisheries section manager, about the agency's decision to get behind a 4-fish walleye bag limit statewide, effective fishing opener, walleye opener 2026. So as Brad just said, it's not locked in then based on this rulemaking process, but we'll see what happens going forward. So Brad, again, I'm trying to drill into what's changed here. And I've read stories that we've had about this. You know, there's concern about climate, invasives, walleyes being a cooler water species. Is it tougher out there to grow walleyes? I want to zoom in on a little bit on the technology thing. You know, it's something I've been harping on, forward-facing sonar, and the ability of anglers more and more to harness this technology, which is getting cheaper and cheaper, to find walleyes and really put added pressure on them. We've seen the state of Mississippi lower crappie limits in some of its reservoirs. There's a lot of discussion about this nationwide. Is the technology piece maybe the straw that broke the camel's back on this specific issue?
You know, it's certainly one. I'll get back to that. I would say the one that has really changed most is that the peer review literature coming out about system change for walleyes in the face of climate and invasive species. Walleyes thrive in certain conditions, and invasive species, particularly zebra mussels and spiny water fleas and warmer water, change that amount of habitat that's available. And none of the scientific literature that's been coming out suggests that those things are positive for walleyes. They tend to be positive for warm water and clear water species like largemouth bass, like smallmouth bass, et cetera. So I would say that would be more important, but technology certainly plays into that. Fishing lines have changed. GPS was a game changer for a lot of people in terms of finding spots, but now it's finding individual fish even more so. And obviously, this wouldn't matter the early spring bite when, you know, you're tossing a jig and minnow into 6 feet of water. But during the summertime, when fish are out, sometimes suspended or working deeper water structure, that technology matters. It's pretty amazing what people can do with it.
The point used to always be, well, no one catches 6 walleyes, so lowering it to 4 doesn't really help that much. I don't know that that's as true anymore, thanks to some of the technology that we've got. More and more people who know what they're doing, they can catch 6 walleyes in a day. And so can a 4-fish limit indeed maybe help walleye populations?
I think there are situations where it can, Rob, honestly. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you, we manage over 1,100 lakes for walleyes. And I'm not going to sit here and tell anybody, and I haven't, that of those 1,100 lakes, we're going to improve walleye fishing through this step. That's just not reasonable. And we don't have the science to say that we would or we would not. Where we do have our best science and we have annual work is our large lakes. And we manage those with a 4-fish bag. And that has gone quite well. We have excellent walleye fishing. You look at the changes we made in 2020 on Lake Pepin and the Mississippi River, our border water regulations, that went from 6 to 4. And that's our most productive walleye fishery we have in the state. And I have heard absolutely no pushback whatsoever on those changes. So people do occasionally catch 6 walleyes. Our latest creel on Ottertail showed that does happen. We've talked about the technology issue and the way it's getting cheaper. I've always told people have said, well, it's too expensive. People won't buy it. Well, you know, 10 years ago, a 50-inch TV was $1,000, and now you can get one for $150. So that is real as well.
Brad, I believe Tony Kennedy's piece in the Star Tribune mentioned, you know, there's angler surveys that suggest that maybe anglers are warming up to this concept of a 4-fish bag limit a little more than they were 5 or 10 years ago. Is there some truth to that?
Yeah, there is. We do a statewide angler survey every year. You know, it's a mail survey that's sent to statistically valid level of folks. And that has changed. You know, for many years, we've been doing that since around 2006, actually. And it was very similar from year to year. About a third of the people were in favor, about a third had no opinion, and about a third were opposed. Well, the last one we did, the approval rate went up to almost 50%. I believe 48 is the exact number. And the number of people who opposed and who were neutral both went down. And so this has changed. Plus, when we're out on the water doing our creel surveys, we did ask that question, and it included about 10 different creel surveys we had around the state. And 67% of the people who answered that were in favor, and only 18% opposed. So yes, that has changed. And whether that's a recognition that that there's more ability for people to find and catch walleyes, or whether it's the fact that people say, you know what, I don't need that many fish to have a good meal and to have a good, I don't know what everybody's individual motivation is, but it has changed for sure.
There's certainly a lot of anglers in Minnesota who fish other states and provinces who probably come home and realize we have the most liberal walleye limit in the region.
We do. Every other state around us is below six. Province of Ontario, two or four, depending on where you are. You know, I mentioned the science that's out there, and that's about the North Temperate Lakes, which includes all those other states, Michigan, Wisconsin, Ontario, Manitoba, et cetera. So, you know, this isn't a Minnesota issue. It is broader than that. So, yeah, it is. And again, with the four fish limit on our large walleye lakes, I have not personally heard a lot of pushback from anglers who go to those saying that it should be more. They seem very happy with it, and the resorts seem very pleased.
Brad, last question. What's the process going to be? How is this going to unfold? You mentioned there will be an opportunity for public review. Can you tell us what that might look like over the next 18 months?
Absolutely. And sometime after the first of the year will be the formal process in terms of comments. But as I said, anybody who comments beforehand, we're not going to ignore it just because it's not in that window.
Sure.
But yeah, there's a statutorily required amount of time. I believe that's 30 days, but I intend to extend that for this because I know there's going to be a lot of interest out there. And if it's a positive as to what we want to do, if it's a negative as to what we want to do, we want to hear about that. And if people have questions on the why, that's what I'm hoping that, you know, appearances like today can give people the idea of what the why is. If they have thoughts or contrary opinions to that, I want to hear that. And I'll be honest, there are fishery staff who aren't, you know, 100%, you know, convinced that this is the right way to go. But as a department and as a broad section of fisheries, this is the way we feel we should go right now.
Well, it's going to be compelling and interesting to watch this unfold as an outdoor scribe. There'll be a lot to write about, Brad.
There will be. And like I said, that there's a lot going on in fish and fishing in Minnesota right now. And this is just one of those things.
Well, Brad, thanks so much for describing that in detail for us. Good luck as the process unfolds. We will definitely stay in touch with you. Have a good rest of your autumn as it transitions to winter, and good fishing, good ice fishing for you this winter.
Very good. Thanks, Rob, and same to all the folks out there.
That was Brad Parsons, Minnesota DNR Fisheries Section Manager. We appreciate Brad carving out some time. Lot to break down there. We will continue to follow this as the process unfolds. With that, let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
The Wisconsin Ice Fishing Expo has moved to the EAA grounds in Oshkosh December 13th through the 15th. Nearly twice the size as last year, with super convenient parking with free shuttles. Deals on shacks, lures, gear, electronics, expert seminars from Larry Smith, Tom Boley, and many others. Trout Pond and Ice Junkies Kids Zone. Food trucks, free giveaways, and visit Santa on Sunday. Kids 12 and under free. Go to icefishexpo.com for info. Sponsored by Wisconsin Outdoor News, Ion, Eskimo, Ice Team, Acme, and Thorn Brothers.
Your land is your legacy, but keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land in Michigan, Wisconsin, or Minnesota, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit familyforestcarbon.org and enroll today.
Clam Outdoors has what ice anglers need for ice fishing this winter. From portable fish traps and pop-up hub shelters to ice armor by Clam Outerwear and cold weather gear to stay warm on those cold winter days. Along with a wide array of accessories, Clam Pro Tackle, Frost Ice Line, rods, reels, and combos, and so much more. Whether you're a hardcore or casual ice angler, Clam has what you need for ice fishing. Check out the full line of ice fishing gear at clamoutdoors.com.
Love the great outdoors? Then you need outdoor news in your life. Outdoor News is your go-to source for local hunting and fishing intel, conservation news, and outdoor adventure stories. Stay informed on seasons, limits, and the best spots to cast your line or set up your stand. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, Outdoor News has something for every outdoor adventurer. Subscribe today. Visit OutdoorNews.com or call 1-800-535-5191 to get started. Outdoor News, supporting the outdoor community since 1968.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
Attention hunters, have you bagged an impressive whitetail buck this season? Then show it off in the Outdoor News Best Buck Contest, sponsored by Federal. The contest runs through January 2025. Bow, rifle, or muzzleloader, all hunters are welcome. Visit OutdoorNews.com for a shot at great prizes and bragging rights. Click the Best Buck Contest link atop the page at OutdoorNews.com to learn more, enter, and view official rules. That's OutdoorNews.com.
Hey folks, welcome back. Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Jerislein. Thanks for tuning into the broadcast. I hope you like the chatter here. If so, call us at 800-535-5191. Subscribe to print or digital versions of Outdoor News. Makes a great holiday gift. Again, you can do that at OutdoorNews.com. Also, want to check in with our friend Tony Peterson. Writes for TheMeatEater.com and hardcore deer hunter, hardcore all-around outdoorsman, frankly. Thought we'd devote a little time today, Tony. Chat a little bit about how the deer season has gone for you. How are you doing, first off?
I'm good, man. I appreciate you having me on.
No, I appreciate you carving out time. Yeah, so deer season's pretty well wrapped up, right? 3B is done. We've got the muzzleloader season till December 15th. Is that something you participate in much? You're just mostly focusing on bow hunting.
You know, it kind of depends on what my freezer looks like when muzzleloader season hits. Last year I hunted muzzleloader pretty hard. This year I'm not going to, but it's partially because my daughters are still bow hunting, and so I'm kind of hunting vicariously through them. But sure. I like muzzleloader hunting a lot.
Yeah, it's a good opportunity for folks to get out and still use some gunpowder, right? But not maybe deal with the volume of people in the woods that that we saw during the regular firearm season. It's a colder experience, definitely. But with these modern muzzleloaders, I mean, you can shoot as far as a shotgun and then some, can't you?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. You scope them up, those inline muzzleloaders, and you can reach out and touch them. But they're still, you know, they're comparable to a shotgun as far as accuracy and distance.
Let's talk a little bit about how the deer season went for you. You hunted multiple states. We had a very warm fall. Hard to believe we're talking about that now, as cold as it's gotten. We actually had some below normal temperatures in late November and getting into December. But how would you rank the early bow hunting season, as well as what you were hearing about the firearms hunting around the region?
We started out, I had a good year with the girls, had a good year for myself. It got pretty weird as we got closer to the rut and then closer to the gun season. We had a lot of southeast winds, and we had a lot of days that were like almost like you were hunting in the Pacific Northwest, where we had kind of drizzly rain,
right?
Almost no wind. And I think, you know, I'm sure you've heard a lot of kind of grumblings out of the gun season this year so far. And I think it was because, you know, you kind of build your plan around north and west winds and some cold weather, and you get that south-southeast stuff, and it's just a different, weird year for deer movement. It was a different thing.
And it was super dry. I think it was, and it was so hard to believe, earlier in the year while we were talking about was all the rain, all the moisture, water had to become more of a factor as we got deeper into the fall for your hunting, didn't it?
In some places, it was everything. It just depends where I was, but... Yeah, I mean, it was kind of an odd one, you know, and I built a whole rut hunting plan this year around northwest winds and kind of had a whole thing sort of laid out and ready to go since turkey season. And I had to do completely opposite of what I expected for most of my rut hunting. And it was, I think a lot of people kind of ran into that a little bit this year.
What does that mean practically on the ground, Tony? I mean, the rut still happened.
Right.
But the wind was different, so you had to change locations from where you expected deer to come in from. What does that look like?
Well, there's kind of two parts to it, right? Like those bucks out there, they are living off their noses during the rut. And so all of their movement is keyed around what they can smell. And so when you set stands for the rut and you plan on that northwest wind, you're set up, or north or west wind, I kind of should say, you know, you're set up not only for them to move with that wind in a certain way, but for you to be downwind to where they're going to go so you don't get busted. And when the wind comes in the exact opposite way you expect, those tree stands, you know, you're not going to want to sit them anymore because that the wind direction is going to be totally wrong. And then the buck movement's going to be way different. And I saw that, you know, big time in Minnesota and Wisconsin this year, where the movement was just vastly different than in some years past on some of the properties I hunt. And it's because they're cruising with that wind. And if it's not coming out of the north and it's coming out of the south, their movements are going to be different.
How did food factor into your hunting patterns this year, Tony? A, we had a fairly poor mast year. We call it poor because last year was just bonkers, right. but definitely down from last year. And then the crops came out pretty darn fast. Most crop harvest was completed early. Most of it was done before the firearm season because it was a warm, dry autumn. I mean, you know, driving around Thanksgiving, not only are the crops all out, most of the fields are plowed, and all I'm seeing is black dirt because of that. These long, dry falls that we're having allows the farmers to get out and take care of business early. Again, how did maybe a general lack of food compared to past years affect the deer movement?
You know, I would take a year like this over last year every time, as far as just being able to pinpoint deer better. Mm-hmm. And even, mm-hmm. you know, it helped us with bear earlier in the year too,
right?
Not having tons and tons of natural browse out there, of mast out there for the bears. But the same thing with the deer. You know, I mean, I got on some egg patterns this fall and some stuff like that, but it was like just generally easier to figure out than last year. I mean, they could go anywhere mm-hmm. last year and get plenty of calories. So this year was, for me anyway, was kind of a little bit easier for that pattern.
No, it makes sense. Absolutely makes sense. You're able to bottleneck deer a little bit better when the crops are down, right? They're going to hold more to cover, and they don't have to move through the ag fields. They don't have the ability to do that as well if they're looking to stay in cover. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Dreesen and our buddy Tony Peterson recapping the hunting season. The deer kill up in Minnesota anyway, Tony. Not a lot. I think by the end of the year, it's going to be up a couple points would be my prediction. The firearms kill was up, and now the overall deer kill is up. Deer kill also up in Wisconsin. We got some preliminary totals this past week showing that the firearms harvest up 5.2% statewide, and the total harvest, including bow and crossbow seasons, up 8.7% from the same time last year. What do you chalk that up to, I guess, here in Minnesota anyway? The fact that, you know, perhaps, like you say, in some ways it was easier hunting with less food on the ground?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to move more. When they have to work a little harder for food, they're going to move more. And I'd be curious, I guess I haven't seen the breakdown in Minnesota yet on what the archery harvest looks like with crossbows after a couple of years and seeing – you know, how I don't know if anybody's ever done this before, but we had probably the latest gun opener we'll have in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And, you know, next year it'll bounce back to November 3rd or whatever it'll be early. And I don't know if there's any correlation there or not, getting people out a little bit later when it's a little colder or something. But I hunted in Minnesota here some with a bow during gun season, but I didn't hunt Wisconsin at all for the gun season. But I heard from a few people just, you know, anecdotally.
Well, like I say, despite all that, the deer harvest, at least for now, up in Wisconsin and in Minnesota, so some positive trends. We had good hunting conditions, I think, for the firearms deer season. Yeah, maybe it was a little rainy, like you mentioned, but overall it wasn't super cold, it wasn't super warm. It seemed like it shaped up pretty well for that firearms season, and perhaps that's, you know, that's what it's all about sometimes, is can people get out and have a reasonably enjoyable, normal experience.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I feel like we do this every year where, you know, leading up to the gun season and the rut, you kind of have big expectations. And then we always have a bunch of questions about mm-hmm. the deer harvest after. And it's kind of like, you know, and I know hunters do this a lot, but we expect consistency from year to year and we hunt on memories. And then the next gun season comes or the next rut comes and you kind of leave the backside of it and you go, it wasn't what I expected. And, it, you know, over and over and over again, it's not what I expected.
Well, we alluded to the fact that we've got, another week of muzzleloader hunting through the 15th, I believe, is the final day of that. But we also have several weeks of archery deer hunting. That goes until the end of the year. And that's a big deal for you, right? That's something you participate in most years, especially if you have room in your freezer.
Yeah. And, it, you know, this year, just because of how it has, you know, it shook out. I in fact, yesterday I went and asked permission with a landowner to see if I could take my daughters out to his place to try to get after it here before this season wraps up, because my daughters have tags left and they've been asking me a lot to go. So they're about to get like a real dose of reality on hunting, because they've been, you know, they've been handled pretty like I've used kid gloves with them a lot, and they've been pretty lucky.
That's good.
And now they're going to go freeze, and it's going to be not the hunting they're used to, but I'm very excited for it.
Yeah, I mean, this is looking like old school December bow hunting, right, where it's a very cold experience, short days, and maybe the one good news is that, you know, when it's dark out by 4:30, you're getting out of the woods at a fairly early hour, so you're not late, still time to get home and help the kids with homework. But you know, for folks who've never experienced bow hunting in December, Tony, why would someone want to do it beyond just, yeah, hey, I need to fill the freezer? Are there aspects of it that are unique that you cherish?
It's difficult. I like that. But it's also, you have a chance to start working the deer again, because most people are done. Mm-hmm. You know, they're ice fishing, they're out of the woods, gun seasons are mostly over other than muzzleloader. So I kind of feel like even though you're hunting the survivors of the season and you're hunting deer that are pretty jaded because they've been, you know, we've been getting after them a while, you don't have the human factor nearly as much. And so you can kind of go back to the basics and be like, all right, what are they doing? What's point A to point B, and how can I figure it out? And so I like that part a lot.
Yeah, the deer are kind of getting back to their normal patterns a little bit, right?
Yep.
I mean, it's not like it was early season, but there's so little hunting pressure out there that you start to see deer behaving like deer in December. For a purist like you, I hope you don't mind me using that term, that's got to be pretty enjoyable.
You know, it's fun because I do a lot of public land hunting, and I hunt a lot of places where there's a lot of people. And that's always just like top of mind. And so you're like, I want to work the deer, but I have to work the people too. Like, where are they going? What are they doing? And when you kind of get it distilled down to the late season, you're hunting the most difficult deer of the season, but you kind of remove that human factor. And man, I enjoy that, because you just get back to, like, you know, you're not really reading sign anymore other than tracks and beaten trails, you know, scrapes, rubs, that doesn't matter. It's just like, where are they walking, and how can I get close to them without them knowing?
Well, very well put. Yeah. So I encourage folks, get out and enjoy what's left of the archery deer season. There's still opportunities to fill a tag. Well, Tony, thanks for spending some time with us and talking deer hunting. It's always fun chatting with you, and congratulations on another good year. And congratulations on getting those daughters out. That's pretty cool, man.
Well, I appreciate it, buddy.
All right. Tony Peterson. Read him at themeateater.com if you want to see what he's got cooking. Appreciate him carving out some time to chat with us. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Sick of eating tag soup? It's time to own your odds this fall with Onyx Hunt, the GPS hunting app trusted by millions of hunters. Now you'll have access to nationwide public and private land ownership information, waypoints, optimal wind for each stand, tracks, and much more. All at your fingertips. Go to onxmaps.com/hunt and use code ODN20 at checkout to receive 20% off your membership. That's code ODN20.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
The Wisconsin Ice Fishing Expo has moved to the EAA grounds in Oshkosh December 13th through the 15th. Nearly twice the size as last year, with super convenient parking with free shuttles. Deals on shacks, lures, gear, electronics, expert seminars from Larry Smith, Tom Boley, and many others. Trout Pond and Ice Junkies Kids Zone. Food trucks, free giveaways, and visit Santa on Sunday. Kids 12 and under free. Go to icefishexpo.com for info. Sponsored by Wisconsin Outdoor News, Ion, Eskimo, Ice Team, Acme, and Thorn Brothers.
Our outdoor heritage is at a crossroads. Fewer hunters and anglers means less support for the wild places we love. The Outdoor News Foundation is changing that story, one young person at a time. For just $25, you can give a child a year of outdoor knowledge via scholarships, learning camps, and access to OutdoorNews.com. Help us create a legacy for tomorrow's hunters and anglers. Visit OutdoorNews.com/foundation to get involved, learn more, and donate today.
This holiday, give the gift of outdoor news. For the outdoor enthusiast on your list, an outdoor news subscription is the perfect gift. With recreational news spanning seven states and beyond, Outdoor News delivers the year-round insights they crave. From the latest fishing hotspots to conservation updates and the latest gear, each issue is packed with trusted information delivered right to their mailbox and inbox. Skip the socks and give them the gift they'll love. Get an Outdoor News subscription today at OutdoorNews.com. Outdoor News, supporting the outdoor community since 1968.
Are you ready to hit the frozen waters and reel in some epic catches? The all-new OutdoorNews.com is your ultimate resource for all things ice fishing. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, OutdoorNews.com is the source for the latest tips, techniques, and gear reviews. Stay ahead of the rest with the most up-to-date ice conditions, fishing reports, and hotspots to maximize your success. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to elevate your hard water game. Visit OutdoorNews.com today and become part of the ice angling revolution.
This segment is brought to you by the Outdoor News Best Buck Contest. Thank you to sponsors Traditions Firearms, Stealth Cam, and Irish Setter. Welcome back, everybody. A final segment of this week's broadcast of Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline with Tim Lesmeister here to wrap things up. Thanks to our previous guests who join us. Check us out online at OutdoorNews.com. If you like the show, subscribe to our print or digital versions or call us at 800-535-5191. Hello, Tim. Welcome. Thanks for coming in and visiting with us again this week. You're back down in Florida, huh?
Back down in Florida, getting ready to go out. If this wind ever lets up, I'm going to get out there and catch some mangrove snappers, some redfish, some sea trout, whatever else is biting. It's a saltwater extravaganza, at least up until Christmas, and then I'll be back up in Minnesota doing some hard water fishing. It sounds like that's shaping up to be what's going to be a good season here for ice anglers. So lots coming up, lots coming down the pipe.
Yep, Spielman and I spoke about that earlier. Of course, hunting season's still underway. I wrote my column this week, Tim, about hunting-related incidents that occur out there. Pat Durkin wrote a similar piece for Wisconsin Outdoor News that prompted me to write this one. He was kind of seeing some trends that a lot of older hunters are involved in firearm safety accidents. You know, looking at the data over the past decade, it was kind of hard to draw that conclusion, I thought, from Minnesota. You know, maybe trends a little bit older. But what jumped out at me is how disproportionate, I think, small game hunting and waterfowl hunters are represented in firearms-related incidents when, you know, so many, you know, the biggest group of hunters is deer hunters. And, yeah, there's some deer hunting accidents. We had a couple this year. We had a fatality. But overall, deer hunting only makes up maybe less than a third, I think, of the total number of firearms-related incidents. And there's way more deer hunters than that. I mean, deer hunters represent, probably two-thirds of the number of licenses sold.
Well, what jumped out at me, and I was a little surprised by this, was exactly that. I mean, the small game hunters, grouse hunting, what is it about grouse hunters that they want to have their gun pointed in the wrong direction? But what shocked me was that there were no turkey hunters on that list here as of recent numbers. And it seems to me in the past, that's what you'd hear a lot about, was that, you know, some turkey hunter shot another turkey hunter because they're sitting in the woods with a call, no blaze orange, just full camo, and somebody mistakes them for a turkey somehow. I think it's just because they're making the sound of a turkey and takes a shot at them. But we haven't seen that in a while. Now, that's a really good sign.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Tim, that I totally missed. You're right. But you got turkey hunters running around out there in camo. There's no blaze orange involved with turkey hunting. And we also have really opened up turkey hunting, right? We used to, it was only a set number of permits, and, you know, everybody had to apply via lottery. Now it's all over the counter. So you've got a lot of guys going out early in the season. There's a little less control over the number of hunters in the woods at any one time. And yeah, like you say, turkey hunters doing a pretty good job of taking care of each other. What do you make of the theory that fewer deer drives, fewer people participating in deer drives might be contributing to fewer hunters being hurt during the firearms deer season, Tim? You got a lot more guys using big permanent stands, more guys just hunting on their own private property. When I was a kid, there were a lot of deer drives, man. That was a big part of hunting, was 20 guys going out and pushing through a woods, and we killed a lot of deer that way. You just don't see that as much anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And another thing that would happen on these deer drives is that, you know, there were guys that were literally walking through the woods, whether you're wearing blaze orange or not. That's movement in the woods, in the fields, and the people that were posting better be pretty sharp-eyed, because if they weren't, they were going to poke a couple of rounds at somebody that was actually trying to push deer towards them. And that was always a problem. And you're right, the deer drives have really gotten to be a lot less frequent. And now we're seeing situations where people are hunting out of, as you said, big, beautiful, conditioned deer stands. We've got one down on our property in Northeast Iowa they call the condo. You can throw a few guys in this thing and everybody can take a shot at the same time if there were that many deer surrounding it. But it's gotten to the point where the deer drives have become obsolete.
And I think it's one reason we're killing fewer deer, too. Pat Durkin has pointed that out in Wisconsin, that people are, seems like they're not working as hard when they're deer hunting. They're not coordinating big deer drives, for better or worse. And so we're not combing the woods and killing deer like we did back in the 80s and the 90s. Although that said, I don't know if you saw some of the stats in our front page story. I mean, Wisconsin's bearing down on a 300,000 deer kill again. That's a lot of dead deer, especially in a state where everyone complains about no one killing deer anymore.
That's true. I think that's always an interesting number to see every year, is how well they're going to do in Wisconsin. Iowa's going to be having their deer run here pretty quick. Their firearm season is, opens on the 7th. And so that ought to be kind of fun to watch and see how Iowa does this year.
Outdoor News Radio, Rob Dreesine, Tim Lesmeister wrapping up this week's broadcast. Tim, we had a nice story by Natalie Ryder about what's going on with perch. DNR not catching very many perch in their similar gill net surveys anymore, and trying to put a spin on it where they realize, well, it's not that the perch aren't there, it's just that they're smaller. So they're still a good forage fish, so all is well. You and I didn't quite take the same thing away from that piece, did we?
I sure didn't. I'm looking at this thing. I don't want forage base. They've got plenty of other minnows that they can eat. Let them have the bluegills. I want to have those big jumbo perch for the frying pan. And you guys need to figure out a way so that we have not more forage base, but more eating base. We want big perch. And so I think whether it takes, you know, some kind of a slot regulation or what, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure how you're going to manage perch. But I think these are biologists. Figure something out. I want jumbos.
Like you were saying off air, the DNR doing an attempt to make lemonade out of lemons. We've got some big perch in some fisheries. I did a big story last year about Mississippi River from basically Red Wing Pool 4, that area downstream. There's a lot of nice perch in the river these days. That's been a real success story. But I think big, healthy perch are a sign of healthy fisheries. And you know, what's going on to, in my opinion, kind of stunt out these perch? And the DNR blaming aquatic invasive species, I think there's a lot of fishing pressure on big perch, right? You know, it's easy to pull these big perch out of lakes, and that means they tend to trend smaller. They're spawning in year one. I mean, that's amazing. And maybe we need to look at some different limits, some slots, something like that, to try to produce bigger perch in Minnesota.
I think it's fishing pressure. That's my number one, I believe. And the reason I say that is because I used to go to Lake Winnebogoshish many, many, many years. And, you know, back in the day, and I always hate to be the old guy saying back in the day, but back in the day, we were getting a lot of big jumbos. And as the fishing pressure increased on that lake, I could see the size of the perch was getting smaller. And so I believe that fishing pressure does play a huge part of whether or not the size structure is going to remain large or small. It's just what it is, what it is.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Well, everybody, check out Natalie Ryder's story about that. And if you want more details, a lot of other content in this week's paper that Tim and I didn't even get to. But Tim, have a good week ahead. We'll talk to you in 7 days.
Sounds good. We'll catch up to you soon.
That's our buddy Tim Lesmeister. Thank you to him, all of our other guests. Everybody, have yourself a great week out of doors. Rob Dreesine signing off for Outdoor News Radio. Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.